dollars an opportunity? Have growth prospects from the US reduced? Have growth prospects from India increased? Which are the top sell-side ideas in the pharmaceutical and healthcare space currently? What are the trends these experts are predicting in the pharmaceutical and healthcare space? Tune in to the third series of The Medicine Box, where I, Ekta Batra, talk to the top six sell-side analysts covering the Indian pharma and healthcare space and drill down to all of their ideas on trends and stocks.
Our guest on today's podcast is Deepak Malik, Research Analyst, Associate Director, Institutional Equities Research at Edelweiss Securities. He has more than 15 years of experience and started his career in Jubilant Life Sciences. He has experience of both the buy side and sell side and is with Edelweiss now for almost 3 years. Hi Deepak, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks Ekta.
Let's start with your overall view on the pharmaceutical space. FY18 was a very dismal year in terms of earnings. There was a 50% cut in earnings according to your report. But FY19, how are we placed and has it been better? And if so, how much?
So if one has to understand the business, so we need to see where are we in the business cycle. So if we see for the last 5 years, so there was a very good run in the US revenue from 11 to 16. And from then 16 to 18, there was a decline in the revenue started happening. And from last two quarters, we are almost kind of stagnant in the US. So looks like that worst is kind of behind. From here onwards, things will either improve or will remain at this level. If we see the next 5 years, then the total opportunity size in the US is almost $100 billion. So $100 billion worth of patents will expire. But the key thing to notice here is that two-thirds of that will be in the complex space. So till now, what we were concerned about was on the pricing pressure, and that also in the solid oral dosage form. But going forward from here, that will not be the main issue. Key issue will be who will be able to get into this complex space, who can adapt the business model as per the opportunity which is opening up in this space. So in complex space, the investments are high, it takes longer gestation period, it's difficult to get the market share.
Why does it take longer in terms of a gestation period when it comes to a complex generic? Why is it so different from, say, just manufacturing a paracetamol?
So it's like, first, the cracking of technology itself is difficult. Making a solid oral is easier compared to an injectable, because there...
So complex includes injectables?
Yes. And in injectable, your investments are higher. US FDA regulations are higher. So first is the cracking the technology itself is difficult. Then the investment which is required in these products, that also is higher. Like in case of Advair, it takes almost $50 million because you also need to do the clinical trials in that. So it takes almost 2-3 years to crack the technology, then 2-3 years to do the clinical trials and do the filing part. And then US FDA also takes longer time to approve the complex products. So again, 2-3 years goes into that part. So almost 8 to 10 years it takes by the time you reach to the market. So your investments are higher, time taken to reach to the market is higher. And on top of that, taking market share also sometimes becomes very difficult. Like in case of Copaxone, Mylan, despite spending 10 years, when he reached to the market, it took him almost a year to get 25-30% kind of market share.
And now you're seeing competition in any case in Copaxone.
Precisely. So that once you have waited so long and then if you're not able to get that fruit, then that is a disappointment.
But which are the companies which have started this cycle, Indian companies which have started this cycle 10 years ago when it comes to complex generics?
So Dr. Reddy and Sun Pharma are the main ones. If you see, these are the...
Sun Pharma is speciality.
Speciality cycle they have started in the last 3-4 years. But if you see in the complex space, they started this journey 10 years back or maybe 8 years back. So they got into injectable far earlier than all the other guys. They got into dermatology far earlier than other peers. If you see Torrent and all, these are entering, Alkem, Alembic, they are entering into dermatology now. Where Sun Pharma acquired Taro 5 years back, entered into that space, he's seen that upcycle. Now the pricing pressure has started coming into that. So Dr. Reddy and Sun, I think, are by far the leaders in terms of their investments into the complex space.
Okay. So when you talk about complex, it's mainly dermatology products as well as injectable products, the ones which are more difficult to manufacture?
So there are three categories which we have also highlighted in our report. First category is the biosimilars, which are the complex ones. Then second is the injectables. Then third is the respiratory products. And then fourth is the drug device combinations. So these are the, then muscle mines and all those also are a little bit complex, but mainly if you have to categorize, then these are the three main brackets where you put in the complex products.
So if you're talking about, say, Dr. Reddy's, how much do they have in terms of a complex portfolio right now? If you can quantify it for us, and if we can have some kind of visibility or metric to quantify it.
So if you see, Dr. Reddy has total 100 filings. Currently they have 80 products which they have launched and in the US market, 100 in the filings. So in that 100, almost 60 are the Para 4s which are there. And in that half further is FTF. Now if I have to see in terms of complexity, so one third is the injectable portfolio which they have, which is in few of the injectables are very good, like Copaxone is a very good product which they have, Propofol is a good one which they have. Earlier they launched Vidaza Decogen, they were the first one to enter into the market. So they have a good basket, and then they have Suboxone which they recently launched, but now it has become, because they got late into entering into this market, so now it's not that attractive. Then Nuvaring is another one which they have, Iron Sucrose they have, Sandostatin LR, which is, I think they have just recently filed, they're also getting into biosimilars. So I think in complex space, Dr. Reddy has, I think, the best pipeline among the peers.
But they are seeing delays constantly in their product portfolio, right, in terms of launches. For example, Nuvaring, Copaxone, all of them have been pushed further into, I think, FY20.
Yes.
And earlier anticipated date was what, FY18, yes, FY19?
Yes.
So how do you anticipate for such a risk?
So two things. So first, the delay is because the US FDA itself is not clear, that because he is also putting up the guidelines what needs to be done to get the approval in these products. Okay, so for Copaxone, it's not only Dr. Reddy, even Mylan and Natco also took 10 years to get the approval. So first approval took 10 years. Now after that, I think second approval took 1 year, and I think the third guy, Dr. Reddy, will also be entering into this space in the next 6 months or so. Nuvaring, nobody has got the approval till now. So it's a kind of trial and hit error which they do with the US FDA in terms of how they can prove the bioequivalence. So that, I think, delays the approval. And second thing is the warning letter and the observation which many of our Indian companies have got. So because of that, the new product approvals get delayed. So these are the two main reason for which I think all these companies are seeing those delays in approval.
Okay. When a company is spending 10 years in terms of producing or developing a product which is actually a copy of a product which already exists in the market, how do you anticipate what the other competition is which you're probably going to face at the same time, or does any company ever know about it?
So yes, it's a little riskier game, and if you see, if somebody is going to spend $50 million plus on a product and he has to wait for 10 years and there's so much of risk and unpredictability in the revenue and the competition, so the best approach is that you build a portfolio of those products. Don't depend on one product because one may not hit it. So that is the reason if you see small companies or mid-sized companies, they don't start with the complex products. And that is the reason why the competition in complex is not that much the way it is in solid oral dosage form. So these are the large companies who has the budget of $250 million plus in the R&D. They are able to spend this kind of money on the complex products. So and that is the reason there are only four or five companies in each of these product baskets. Like if you see in Copaxone, there are five companies. If you see Nuvaring, there are three, four companies. In Advair also, there are four, five companies.
Lupin, but why are more companies not producing these drugs? Why are they not seeing it as an opportunity?
Because it takes $50 million and it takes so much of time. So smaller
companies. I'm not talking about Indian companies. I'm talking about US generic companies also. Or other generic companies, China for example.
So every company has taken the bet. If we take the larger US companies like Sandoz and Mylan, so they have chosen their bets that where they want to bet on. Like if you see Mylan, he's largely into respiratory and biosimilar portfolio. Now everybody can't go in every field. So they choose two or three areas where they specialize in, and then rest of the stuff they leave it for the other people. So same is the case with Sandoz. Sandoz is the earliest entrant in the biosimilar. He has the largest portfolio in the biosimilar. But if you see in case of injectables, he's not that strong. So everybody is choosing their battles there where they want to be in.
Okay. So according to you, which is probably the most lucrative medicinal segment to be in or therapeutic segment to be in the US?
I believe injectable and respiratory are the two good ones, where Indian companies also have some advantage. Even though biosimilar in terms of size of the opportunity is the largest, the profitability also will be the largest, but Indian companies are at disadvantage in this space because interchangeability is still not there fully. You need to do those every studies to get into that market. So as a result, you are not able to access the market. You are not able to take the market share in those products. And whereas these the multinational companies like Pfizer, Novartis, Amgen, they are also part of that biosimilar opportunity, and they are having an edge on the Indian companies because they are able to get the access of the doctors because they have that front end field force and they have access to the formularies also. So their Indian companies are at disadvantage. But whereas if I see in terms of injectables and respiratory, those kind of entry barriers are not there. So there, if you crack that technology, you can get those market shares. So I believe injectables and respiratory are the two opportunities where the Indian companies can make big.
And which are the best companies to play that opportunity in India, injectables as well as respiratory in the US?
So injectables, if I see, there are four, five companies who are targeting that. So Sun, Dr. Reddy, Aurobindo, then Cipla, and Netco are the five ones which are targeting that. But in that, if we see Sun and Dr. Reddy are the ones where they are targeting those complex injectables, where they are entering into those long-acting injectables like or the Dupo technology like Doxil, which they are targeting. So recently, Sandostatin LR for Dr. Reddy, so Lupron Depot for Sun. So these are the ones where they are targeting, where there are very few companies are there in that. So in these technologies, I think Sun and DRL will be the best. And in respiratory, Lupin and Cipla are ahead of everybody else. So if you see Lupin, he has a good portfolio of 8-9 products in the pipeline. And they have already filed FTF in Spiro. Spiro is a $1.7 billion product. And they have also filed ProAir. Whereas Cipla is targeting for Advair, but still it in the clinical stage, and at the same time they also into the Albuterol. So they, I think Lupin and Cipla are to be played if you want to play the respiratory opportunity.
But the problem with injectables as an opportunity is because of the sterile capacities that we have in India, the manufacturing capacities that we have, there's always maybe a certain amount of risk which is involved with them as compared to oral dosage manufacturing facilities. There are more US FDA observations, more US
yes.
FDA risk. We've seen that.
Yeah.
Does that worry you at all?
Yeah, so there are risk in this complex game. So it's not risk-free kind of. So one, obviously the investment which we discuss is higher, and then these kind of regulatory risks are also higher because US FDA is also increasing the bar every day, every year kind of. So you need to follow those rules because otherwise it'll be very difficult. So I think these companies will learn because this cycle, even Mylan and Sandoz also has gone through, and then they have overcome that. So Indian companies also will do that in the due period. And that is also to do with because now India is so important to the US in terms of their healthcare needs. Almost one third of the generic drugs is coming from India. So I think that is also one of the reasons why they've increased the bar for Indian companies. So
that's on injectable drugs and that's on the entire complex generic space. But we haven't spoken about the generic opportunity,
okay.
Which is basically the bread and butter of Indian companies right now. Do you expect maybe further price pressure? What is your reading on what the dynamics of price pressure are?
So if we understand the history of price pressure, so there are two, three things which were impacting the market. So one was that there was a concentration of revenue, the products in their portfolio, because over the period of time, all of them were strong in few products. Few products, like 20% of their products, was giving almost 60-70% of their profits. So when the competition hit in those products, so the pricing pressure was very acute. So it reached to high double digit kind of. And whereas the market pricing pressure was not that much, but these companies faced a lot of pricing pressure because when their bread and butter gone down. Second thing was that their new approval stopped because they were facing those regulatory issues. So that was the second thing. And third was a consolidation in the industry, consolidation in the buyers, consolidation in the PBMs and the pharmacies and the distributors and the insurance guys. So which tilted the negotiating power from the manufacturers to the buyers. So these were the three, four phenomena which were taking place in the last three, 4 years, which were putting up the pricing pressure on these companies. And on top of that, USFDA is giving faster approval to these products.
So how have things changed now?
Yeah, so now going forward, that concentration of revenue in the portfolio has gone down drastically. I don't think any of these companies have now concentration of revenue except Cadila, where they have few mesalamines which contributing abnormally in their in the portfolio. Apart from that, Lupin, Dr. Reddy and Sun has already seen that has gone down from their portfolio. So to that extent, I think that portion will go away. Second, in complex products, the pricing pressure is not that severe the way it is into the generic portfolio. And increasingly, they are entering into the complex portfolios, complex products, so pricing pressure will be lesser. So I think price erosion will be somewhere around in the range of 5 to 7%, which is the historical average. And if I go by the commentary of these companies over the last two quarters, almost all of them have said that the kind of pricing pressure is now has behind. So it's not worsening, it's stabilizing at around 5-6%.
Okay, so it's probably stabilizing at 5-6% in terms of price pressure. But is lower drug prices going to become the next election mandate or the ticket what the in terms of what the US elections will be won on? And you've done a lot of work, I think, in terms of the possibilities of that happening, as well as what the you know, what they could propose as well. So take us through what we can expect in layman terms.
Okay, so if you see in US currently, 17% of the GDP is being spent on the healthcare. This is by far the largest across the world. If you see Europe, they spend only 7-8%. So there's something wrong with the system. It's not a very efficient system which they have. So what is that wrong is that they have a middle layer which is called PBMs.
Which
is PBM is basically they help the insurance company in making those copays for the customers. That and they do the negotiation with the companies, with the drug companies, and then which drugs the customer should take or the patient should take, so they decide. So that is an extra layer which is there in this system. And now that extra layer, when they negotiate with the companies, so they take a lot of rebates. Now those rebates are not being passed on to the customers. So that is the inefficiency there. So that is the opaqueness which is there in that system.
So just give us an example. If you buy Crocin in the US, how does it work in terms of?
So if you see, like, suppose if a company like Indian company is selling something to the US market, like suppose Crocin, so what will happen is that that guy, so the one which is buying it from the distributor or the pharmacies or the PBMs which is negotiating with these our companies, he'll say, give me rebate, how much rebate you will give me, giving me. So if suppose it says that, okay, 50% rebate I will give it to you. So what will happen is that the manufacturing company will give the product to the...
And rebate is discount.
The discount, basically. So if you see, the Indian company will provide the product to him. He'll give, suppose 50% is the rebate and $100 is the price. He'll give $50 along with it to him, upfront. And then $100 will come after 6 months. That will be the credit period. And then that 50% discount which he has taken, now MRP still remains 100, even though actual it should be $50, and that should be given to the customer. But this $100 is the MRP, and now whatever the margins which trade is making are linked to that $100. So your margins also go higher. Now that $50, how much is passed into the customers, we don't know that about, because the price remains on the pack is $100. So that means it has created opaqueness. Now whatever he wants to transfer, he will pass it on. Whatever he doesn't want to pass it on, will not. Now, one more example I'll give it to you. For like insulin, glargine, I think, is a big issue in the US market.
Insulin is, in fact, I think, a huge issue. There are multiple articles talking about how insulin prices have spiked up. Precise. How much? Over around 100% in the past 5 years?
Yes. So if you see, insulin prices have doubled in the US market over the last 5-6 years. But whereas when you ask Sanofi and you see his results of the US, in fact, his realization has gone down by 25%.
So it's the rebate portion.
It is basically he is giving the rebates and the discount to those people, to the PBMs and to the insurance and to the pharmacies, which actually they are not passing into the customers. So, and that get eaten away by that. Now this is the realization which now they've done, and when all these seven companies CEOs, the top seven companies of the pharma the CEOs, when they gone to the Congress and they presented their case, so they highlighted that point. So if they are really serious this time and they want to take care of it, I think they should remove that layer, because that layer is creating opaqueness.
So there's a chance that the rebate portion will be removed?
Yes. So the medicines should be sold at the price at which they have been sourced and not at the artificial price which they quoted. So that if it happens, I think that prices will come down. And the second thing is, which they are debating, is that give the negotiating power to the Medicare. Now it's almost $1.5 billion, or sorry, $1,500 billion, which Medicare sourced the drugs for. Now, $150 billion. So that they don't have the negotiating power with the companies. So if they will get the negotiating power, then I think that will also bring down the prices of the drugs. So these are the few things which they are discussing to implement.
So what are your top picks, Deepak?
So we like Dr. Reddy and Divi's.
Why do you like Divi's?
So Divi's is the best player in the CRAM segment. So this company is into the outsourcing, contract manufacturing, contract research. And it's also a play on the disruption in the supply chain from the China.
But don't you think that that will settle once capacity starts coming back in China?
So Chinese supplies are very volatile supply. It's not a reliable one. And with the trade war going in with the US, so customers from US and Europe, they want to diversify. They don't want to depend only on China. I'm not saying everything will come from China to India. I'm saying there's some diversification of sources will happen. People want to have one source in India, one source in China. Now in India, if you see, I think Divi's is the best company in terms of contract manufacturing in our country. So Syngene is also entering into, but there's no other dedicated company which is there in this space. So that gives them the competitive advantage. If you see their margins among the space, it's the highest, 40% margin.
40%.
And if you see their ROCs, that also 30% plus kind of ROC they make. They don't have any debt. They've never raised equity. So very clean balance sheet, very clean management. And on top of that, regulatory risks are minimal in Divi's because the way he resolved that import alert so fast. So kind of lesser risk in this company with a better margins, good balance sheet, and 15 to 20% kind of growth visibility for the next 3 years, I think you will not find in any other company.
And cells?
Cells, we are selling Sun Pharma and Biocon.
Why is it a sell on Sun Pharma?
Sun, if you see, he is entering into specialty.
It's not to do with anything besides the fundamentals of the company.
Yeah, so we are largely focused only on the fundamentals. Because these kind of things keep coming down, come and go, and it impact temporarily, but the business remains forever. So our call is more on the business person.
So it doesn't bother you about Aditya MediSales and all what happened?
It bothers, but these are, I'm saying, temporary short-term phenomena, which I think management has also acknowledged and they are correcting that thing. So I think that per se is now being taken care. So that issue has been taken care. Now, in terms of their business fundamentals, if you see, Sun main bet is on the specialty in the US. Now US, half of the revenue for the company comes from US. So they have acquired a lot of companies.
Small companies.
Yeah, so they've invested almost $1.5 billion in specialty and the branded stuff over the last 4-5 years. So their main bet is on specialty. Now specialty is one game which is not that easy. Because one, you have acquired all the molecules from the other firms, and now they are the selling it to you, so there must be some reason why they are selling it to you. They must not be that much confident on their molecules. So it's kind of a portfolio of those discarded assets by somebody else you have created it. Fine, maybe you would have bought something good. Second thing is that all these molecules where we have seen, there are some of the other issues. Like the largest one, MK3222, which is Ilumya, which they have just recently launched.
Which is for psoriasis.
For psoriasis, yeah. So there are six companies who have already entered in that market. So it's a hyper competitive market, and the previous generation of the products which are there, so they are going off patent. Now their generic competition is coming in. Mm-hmm. So you see, so there's a two side forces which are putting on it. So one, the generic competition which is coming, as a result the prices are going down in the existing therapies, and second, more efficacious and more safer therapies are coming in, which is creating a competitive pressure, because those are having a better efficacy than your product.
Than your product.
So
I think specialty is maybe the biggest problem.
It's a long-term bet. I think Sun will take some time to learn this game, because nobody knows Sun in the US market, especially the doctors. So they have created the field force. Now that field force have started promoting those products. So I think over the period of time, they will learn from these mistakes which will happen in the initial phase, and then eventually they'll become successful. So I'm not very positive on in the next 2-3 years. I think there will be few challenges when they will scale up their specialty portfolio. And moreover, the Absorica, which is going off patent in 2020 November, which is almost $200 million plus product for them. And Dusa, there is already one more competition which has come in. So both these things put together, $300 million revenue is at risk.
And why a sell on Biocon?
So Biocon, I think Biocon is a fantastic company. So they are getting into that biosimilar space. But I think valuations are ahead of the estimates.
So it's mainly because of valuations.
Yeah, because the street is factoring in almost $3.5 to $4 billion valuation for the biosimilar business, where they have done the investment of around $600 million. Mm-hmm. So almost 6-7 times they are giving the value to that business.
Especially when you have competition coming up and biosimilars is not picking up as much in
precisely.
The US.
Precisely. So this space is so unpredictable that we have taken few assumptions like 20% market shares in certain products and then 60-70% price erosion. So These are the untested waters. Nobody knows precisely what is going to happen in. But the valuation is building in the best case scenarios, which we believe may not be possible. And second is that Biocon bet is largely on the insulin. There 2/3 of investments is happening in insulin. And if insulin prices in US comes down, then the case for that such a bullish argument goes away. So.
Okay. All right, Deepak. On that note, we're going to wrap up the conversation. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure speaking with you and really drilling down into the specifics of this pharmaceutical space. Thank you very much for joining in on The Medicine Box.
Thank you, Ekta, for hosting.